Great to be here. Thank you very much. And this is actually a wonderful presentation to follow, because I think what I'm going to try and do is share some evidence that begins to support that all of the interventions that we just heard about are really going to begin to tackle some of the biggest health obstacles in our communities. So I have no relationships to disclose. So I'm sure everybody in this room is aware that many U.S. adults do not obtain the recommended amount of physical activity. In fact, based on self-report, nearly 40% of adults do not meet the Department of Health and Human Services recommended guidelines for a minimum of 150 minutes per week of moderate physical activity. If you look at, and some estimates based on accelerometer data suggest that this number is even much higher. So this is a high-risk group. They're at high risk of developing a number of cardiovascular disease risk factors and would benefit greatly from interventions that allow them to increase their levels of physical activity. One such intervention or opportunity would be active transport, which is walking and bicycling for transportation. And active transport has real appeal because it allows people to introduce regular exercise into their routine daily activities and helps them overcome some of the barriers to physical activity that people traditionally encounter, such as limited time, limited access to safe and desirable places to be active, and work environments that aren't conducive to physical activity. What we also know is that active transport is an underutilized form of physical activity and transportation. So this study from adults in California showed that only 60% reported either walking or biking for physical activity at least once in the past month. So that's a really low percentage. Clearly, there's an opportunity to help people engage in more physical activity by focusing on active transport. But as we just heard, there are a lot of barriers to that. And so if we're going to begin engaging all stakeholders, changing public policy, and investing in the interventions at the level of built environment necessary to increase the proportion of people engaging active transport, it would be useful to have evidence that that supports and justifies those interventions. So with that in mind, we sought to determine the associations between active transport and cardiovascular disease risk factors in a representative sample of U.S. adults with low levels of work and recreational physical activity. And to do that, we used data from NHANES using the 2007, 2008, and 2009 to 2010 cycles. And we included all individuals who were age 20 years or greater, who were not pregnant, who reported unimpaired mobility, and who had participated in the mobile exam center, where physical exam data and laboratory data is collected. And then, because we were specifically interested in the value of active transport for people who are otherwise engaged in low levels of activity, we further restricted the sample to those who are getting less than 150 minutes per week of combined work and recreational physical activity. So this formed our final sample. And for our final sample, we calculated our main independent variable, which was minutes per week of active transport, which we then categorized into three levels: no active transport, low active transport, or 1 to 149 minutes per week, and high active transport, greater than or equal to 150 minutes per week. And basically, to define the cutoff between low and high, we just used the approximate median of the distribution of active transport in the sample. We looked at a number of dependent variables that are cardiovascular risk factors that have known associations with physical activity, including as continuous variables, BMI, waist circumference, and as dichotomous variables, hypertension, diabetes, low HDL, elevated triglycerides, and metabolic syndrome. And for our statistical analyses for descriptive statistics and unadjusted analyses, we used chi-square and ANOVA. And then for our adjusted analysis, we created seven independent models, one for each of the dependent variables, using multivariable linear regression and logistic regression, and adjusted for standard demographic and socioeconomic variables, as well as some behavioral factors that we thought would be potential confounders, including smoking and that residual amount of time that was spent in combined work and recreational physical activity, although this was by definition less than 150 minutes given the way that we had defined our sample. And then we weighted all of our analyses to account for the complex survey design of NHANES. So what did we find? So strikingly, nearly 80% of adults engaged in no active transport in the past week. People with high levels of active transport tended to be younger, have income below the poverty level, less than a high school education, and they were more likely to have engaged in no work or recreational physical activity. And although it wasn't statistically significant, they were also more likely to be male or Hispanic. So now I'll turn to the results of the unadjusted and adjusted analyses, which looked at the associations between active transport and cardiovascular disease risk factors. So in each of the charts that I'm about to show you, on the x-axis is the level of active transport, with the light blue being no active transport, the medium blue being low active transport, and the darkest blue being high active transport. And then the dependent variable of interest is on the y-axis. So when we did our unadjusted analysis, we found that there was a statistically significant inverse association between the level of active transport and average BMI. And then after adjusting for our covariates, we found that as compared to those who engaged in no active transport, those with low and high levels of active transport had a statistically significant lower mean BMI of 1.5 and 1.7 points, respectively. We saw a similar pattern for average waist circumference. So again, there was an inverse association between level of active transport and mean waist circumference. And then after adjusting for covariates, those with the lowest and highest levels, with low and high levels of active transport had statistically significant 3.8 and 5 centimeter lower mean BMIs than those who engaged in no active transport. We saw, again, there was an inverse association between level of active transport and the odds of having hypertension. And after adjusting for our covariates, those with low and high levels of active transport had a 25 and 42% lower odds of having hypertension. And lastly, there was also an inverse association between diabetes and level of active transport, and those with the highest level of active transport had a 38% reduction in their odds of having diabetes. So I just went through a bunch of charts and data, so I'm just going to summarize the results of all of our regression models in this slide. All of these are compared to the group that engaged in no active transport. So for those with low and high levels of active transport, we found that they had lower mean BMIs, lower mean waist circumference, lower odds of having hypertension, and for those with the highest level of active transport, lower odds of having diabetes. However, we didn't find any statistically significant associations between level of active transport and low HDL, elevated triglycerides, or metabolic syndrome. Although I would add that for elevated triglycerides and metabolic syndrome, we didn't have fasting lab data, which was necessary to look at that variable. So this only included people from the 2007 and 2008 cycle. So there are a number of limitations to our study. One, due to the study design, it's cross-sectional, and so we're unable to attribute a causal relationship. But we did attempt to, in our design, decrease the likelihood of reverse causality, primarily by excluding those people with impaired mobility that might have been a consequence of one of the dependent variables of interest and therefore might have prevented them from engaging in active transport. This is self-reported physical activity data, which has no limitations. However, accelerometer data has been known to not capture cycling well, and so we felt it was justified to use self-reported physical activity data. And lastly, due to the limitations of the NHANES data set, we couldn't account for rural-urban differences. Nonetheless, we think this contributes important understanding to our important information to our understanding of the relationship between active transport and health, and has a number of useful implications. So in summary, what we found is that among U.S. adults with low levels of work and recreational physical activity, active transport is a highly underutilized form of physical activity, and that time spent in active transport is inversely associated with multiple cardiovascular disease risk factors, including BMI, waist circumference, hypertension, and diabetes. I also believe that the study complements the existing research on health benefits of physical activity and supports policy and built environment interventions to promote active transport. And this information is useful for a lot of stakeholders, primarily healthcare providers and public health practitioners, urban planners and transportation planners, and transportation policymakers. So with that, I'd like to thank a number of people who have supported this work, and I guess we're going to take questions at the end. Great. Thank you.